Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
I see.
Yes.
Na, 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 na. There goes my hero.
Okay, good.
Watch him as he goes.
I'm glad you were able to fit the Foo Fighters, redo the Foo Fighters entry.
Yeah, I had to make sure, you know. they're fighting. You know what? Say, mock them all you want, but how much foo do you see?
Well, you know, according to the U.S. government, there is a lot of foo.
Is there?
Well, Foo Fighters were originally...
I'm missing something.
Foo Fighters were the original name of UFOs.
Really?
Yeah, that's where the Foo Fighters got their name. It's because I believe it's like F-O-O, a Foo Fighter. So like when the first reported UFOs were seen by U.S. Military after World War II, they called them Foo Fighters. Or maybe it was before World War II. It was like around that time anyway. Mm. So, but as you may know, the United States government has just actually declassified a ton of UFO material.
Yes. Yeah. I know there's a whole bunch of just UFO shit.
Yes. And I'm not a, as big a UFO enthusiast as I am a Bigfoot enthusiast, but I mean,
UFO shit's all bullshit. So
is it though?
Yeah, is it? It is 100% bullshit.
I don't know. I think that there could be something to it. Whether or not it's, I don't believe it's an alien, perhaps, but I believe there might be something to it.
I'm certain there's certainly unidentified flying objects. That's a definitive fact.
Yes.
The fact that it's in the extraterrestrial is the part that I'm saying is bullshit. But yeah, absolutely. There's UFOs. There's fucking. They revealed that like two of the like classic UFO sightings were revealed to be spy planes. So like, I absolutely believe that there's weird shit you can see in the sky. It's just not extraterrestrial.
You don't think that an alien civilization could send like a robot, a probe, if you will?
All right. So without getting too deep into the idea, here's the simple truth. If they had that power level of technology, they would be undetectable. So if on the off chance that we have been visited or observed by an alien species, there's no way anyone would have seen it. Because if their technology was powerful enough to reach to us, where we can perceive a lot of the known universe and we can't see shit. Like there's nothing alive in all of the perceived universe that we can see beyond like viral creatures or microscopic organisms. Like, yes, there's microscopic organisms all over the fucking place. Alien life is absolutely out there. It's a scientific fact. Like there's no way that there isn't alien life. But the problem is people have the tendency to anthropomorphize everything, even theoretical things like aliens. So people assume that the intelligent aliens that are out there have to be some sort of extensions of humanity, which means that they would be interested in exploring other planets or have developed communication the way we have or something along those lines. But let's just say, let's cut all that aside and say that they are that they did evolve parallel to how we evolved. If they have the technology to fly millions of light years away, there's no way we'd detect it. It would be like a microscopic drone that would just like fly into our atmosphere, collect data, fly back home. There's no way they would accidentally let us be encountered.
I think you're just being a bit pessimistic here, because I think that there probably could be. And here's the reason why. Like I understand your way of thinking, but I also think that you, much like you say people anthropomorphize the aliens, you tend to assign maybe a higher level of intelligence to the aliens than we would have. So like they maybe don't need stealth to do something or other.
It's not about being smarter. It's just the level of technology. Like,
well, yeah.
They would just have, by default, it would just be undetectable, especially because almost all of the UFO sightings were, you know, yokels in the 50s. Like,
well,
clearly, like, those were far more likely to be rockets or stealth planes or some. Like I said, I guarantee that there's been a fuck ton of strange things that have been observed in the sky because governments keep secrets, and that makes sense. Like, I get it. There's just no way it's extraterrestrial life. It doesn't make any sense. Like,
I'm not saying they're alive. I'm saying that it's probably some sort of artificial intelligence and or probe that has come down maybe to take a look at us. Because I firmly think that there are at least somewhat intelligent civilizations out there. Let's put it in, as just intelligent. I don't necessarily say advanced, but here's my reason for that is that you could look at the design of the human eyeball, right? And the human eyeball, and well, the, just a mammalian eyeball. And then you have a squid's eyeball. They do exactly the same thing. However, they evolved nearly identically, but in a completely different, it's like spontaneous looking for sight. So I think that there could hypothetically be a parallel developed civilization out there. That's getting a little deep on that, but I'm not, that's...
the other thing too is if they were parallel developed, they would know, they would have enough of insight about our society to
avoid it completely.
Avoid it. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like it would either be we know what, like it, so that's the other half. If they evolved parallel to us, they would be like, oh, they're the shitty version of our society that we managed to get through. So either they would be like, we're going to eliminate them before they're an intergalactic threat, or just avoid us entirely. I don't think there's a middle ground.
On that, I would agree with you, but I think that's why they keep sending probes. It's like maybe they got past the Trump presidency, and no.
No, but that's the thing. You can't observe. That's the other thing, too. Then it goes down to speed of light. And that's the other thing, too. If it was an automated probe, it wouldn't come back. It would just crash. Like we would find evidence. Like how when we send stuff to Mars, we leave our garbage there.
Yeah, but that's because we're a wasteful garbage species.
But
these might not be a wasteful garbage species.
I just don't buy it. I think it's far more likely that some dude was fucking high on peyote and saw a fucking satellite and was just like, that's a fucking UFO.
Satellite of love.
Yeah, it's far more likely that any intelligent species evolved in a way that they couldn't meaningfully communicate with us. Like they would communicate with like color or sound. Bow, 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 yeah. Even that is like anthropomorphizing a little bit, because like that sound that we could interpret and use to communicate. And more likely it could. Oh, you know what? The closest one that would be real is what was it? The movie with where the aliens' language was time. I was fucking dope.
Oh, Arrival? Yeah. Yes. Love that.
Yes. That was pretty hard sci-fi when it comes to aliens.
No, like, their language wasn't time. It was that their language was circular. So what they say now is also true of the future and true of the past.
Okay.
So right. That they don't have an understanding of the present. They understand their entire lives all at the same time.
Right. Yes.
That came down to language, in that they were if you were able to understand their language, your way of thinking would be modified so that you would be able to live your past, present, and future all at the same time, which is an interesting concept.
Yeah. You understand their language and suddenly your perception of reality changes. Very cool.
Yeah. But that's the truth too. And I try to explain this to people, because, you know, working with, you know, Spanish speakers, it's that when you learn a different language, like, you know, you're learning Japanese, you're learning the way of the weeb. Mm-hmm. When you learn another language, your way of thinking changes, so that you can not only think in a language, but it just alters your perception of things.
Right.
It's like when I used to teach linguistics, and I would tell kids that, you know, the Greeks never had a word for blue, and they're like, what? And they're like, there was no word for blue. Like, they didn't see blue the way that we see blue, because they didn't have a word to identify blue in that way. It's an old, outdated theory. I think some of it has been disproven, but the whole thing goes to like the Odyssey, where they described it as the wine dark sea, right? And it's like, well, the sea is not necessarily going to be red and, you know, wavy. It's blue, but the way they described it is wine dark, because they didn't have the word for blue. So,
right. Yeah, they lacked the word to describe the color. So like the sky would just be the sky.
I feel like I'm on an episode of Joe Rogan right now. Steve, have you ever done DMT?
Or not I'm not high enough.
Do you think a human being could fight that chimp?
I personally think that all aliens look and sound exactly like Don Knotts.
Oh, God, Jesus. What do we got here? We got a bunch of people wandering around the streets. I'm going to clean up this town.
Exactly. They're a, what is it? Mono, mono, monoculture species where they all look exactly the same.
They're all, instead of the planet of hats, it's the planet of it's the planet of knots. No, it's the planet of Mr. Limpets.
It's just the planet of knots.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Oh God. Oh, sorry about that.
Unbelievable. The only difference is the outfits they wear. So some look like cops, some look like classic Elmer Fudd hunters. Yeah. Some are in that suit with the bow tie. They're all knots.
Some of them are dressed as 70s Mr. Furley.
Yes, exactly. Whoa, he's one of those kind of guys.
Why are there so many ostriches?
I only wanted a few ostriches.
I wrote an article years and years ago that Doctor Who was created in America. It was like an alternate history article. And I said, like, Don Knotts would probably play the second Doctor. Like, that was...
it was what if Doctor Who was created in America?
Yeah, it was just, like, an alternate history article that I wrote. It was always one of my favorite articles that I ever wrote. And that was, like, the crux was that Don Knotts was the second Doctor.
I like it. I mean, I would watch the fuck out of that, actually.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, jeez.
Turn on the flux capacitors. All right. Everybody, welcome to Game Classy. I am that sexy voice you hear every other week, Joe. And with me, as always, is the other sexy voice you hear every other week, Steve.
Hello.
Hello. I enjoy gaming.
Hello. I like to play tabletop games.
That's a lie.
I like to theoretically think about tabletop games.
Yeah, I think that's all gamers just like to theoretically like to think about that they would play games, and then they play a game, and then they like, I don't like the people who play these games.
Or the game just sucks.
Or the game just sucks, yeah.
Or both.
Do you want to talk about, we got a couple things to talk about. You want to talk about Indominus first?
Sure.
Since that's the hot topic. It is the hot topic. So as we know, Indominus was released. That was the box set that was going to be like the intro to 9th edition. Apparently, it's not the 9th edition starter.
It's a limited box set.
I make fun of it because it's got stupid bikes in it.
I don't think the bikes are stupid. I just think they're just bikes. Yeah. I'm very much on the 5 out of 10 when it comes to the bikes.
I think they're stupid. But it did have like a full Necron army.
Amazing Necron army, actually.
Yeah, and I think it was like something like 70% off retail. Like it was some obscene discount.
Yeah, for Workshop, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. And it sold out immediately. But it turns out that most of the people who bought it were scalpers, or at least a good chunk of people who bought it were scalpers.
Yeah, or at least attempting to scalp.
Yeah. So that sold out super quick, and then on eBay or, you know, Facebook Marketplace or wherever the hell they were selling it, these box sets were going, like, they were trying to sell the half the set for twice the cost of the box set, just half of it. Because they thought that they were giving some insane deal. So Games Workshop got wind of that and all the people complaining. And they're like, hey, look, if you want it, we're just going to make it made to order. You're not going to get your fancy box for it, but we're going to get you the models, you know, made to order for it. I think that's what it was. They're not doing the box, right?
That I don't know.
Which immediately caused all of the scalpers to, like, start dumping them relatively on the cheaper end.
Smash them right in the nuts.
Yeah.
Good.
But the free market, Steve. But the free market.
Again, free markets only work if there's competitors and things like that. Like, tell me about the free market when you're discussing fucking Comcast. Guess what my options are for cable internet, Joe?
Comcast?
Yes. Guess who else I could go with if I choose to go with in the free market, and I can choose one of their strong competitors who is vying for my business with a better price. Guess who else I could go with?
AT&T?
Comcast. Literally only one. There's only one cable network provider. There's one. Comcast.
AT&T doesn't do cable?
AT&T does not do cable. AT&T does DSL or fiber.
Oh, that's right. I use AT&T for the internet, which just gives me access to all the cable stuff.
Yeah, they don't do cable. They only do fiber or they do DSL. So
yeah, but who wants cable in this day and age?
Literally everyone wants cable. Cable is faster than DSL, and the AT&T fiber is notoriously unreliable.
Jackass, I'm talking about cable TV.
Oh, Well, yeah, that's not that. I mean, same diff. I'm talking about being connected to the internet.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. My ISP options are Comcast.
Normally, human beings, when they say that, are guess who my internet providers are, not guess who my cable providers are.
Well, I mean, only boomers think of television when you say cable now.
No, not just boomers.
Come on. Nobody watches cable television.
Nobody under the age of like 25. I'll give you that. Yeah, nobody watches cable television except for that sweet HBO.
Which everyone's watching on HBO Max now.
So yeah,
they're not even watching cable television anymore.
Yeah.
I did the free trial so I could watch Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol. What the fuck is going on? That's the best part. Just every time Cliff walks into the room.
Yeah, he's just like he's just so mad. He's so fish out of water, but he's a goddamn robot man. It's so great. He reminds me a lot of like Hellboy, where he's like he is himself a completely otherworldly entity, but because of who he is as a person, he just doesn't fit in the scenarios he's in. No.
Exactly. Yeah. Which well, I mean, really when your scenarios are like farting donkey, like going into the mouth of a farting donkey, and
yes, exactly,
and fighting against a cult of the Unmaker, you know, that sort of stuff is like you're like, God damn it, Grant Morrison, knock it off.
I really enjoyed the first season.
We get it, Grant Morrison. You're a weirdo, and you like the weird stuff.
I also like weird stuff.
I know. I love Grant Morrison. It's just he's so Grant Morrison-y that sometimes you have to take a step back and go, Jesus fucking Christ, Grant Morrison. Could you just write a normal comic book?
I never read the comic, so yeah. I feel that I have an advantage because I'm really liking the series and everything is a surprise to me.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. There's no super major surprise in the series.
I enjoyed it a lot. I liked the season one a lot. Season two is okay so far. My biggest gripe with season two is that there's no narration. And now not having narration, I really miss the narration. Like it's something that kind of faded into the background a little bit in season one, but now that it's distinctly not there, I'm like, this is actually inferior, and I didn't think it would be.
Well, you know, if you do go with the comic book format, you know, comics do have a narrator, so it might be a necessary thing. But yeah. Indominus. Sorry, got off on a tangent there. So Games Workshop has made Indominus made to order, and a bunch of scalpers were like, "Aw, nerds, I'm just gonna wait for the next box to, you know." I think it was just because everybody wanted the Indominus set. It's like,
yeah, I mean, the box was the box value was completely crazy. You got the full hardcover book, the Necron army in there is great, the Marines army in there is great.
You get the ninth edition rules in there.
Like the only reason you would want to pass on that box in general is if you have zero interest in either Necrons or Marines. Like, if you don't want either of those armies, it's an easy pass. But if you are, like, minorly interested in either of those armies, you should buy the box set.
Yeah, I mean, and I just don't like any of the Primaris stuff in that box set. I just think it's all kind of dumb.
I'm just playing with Nurgle Demons. I already have a 40K army.
Nurgle Demons.
Yep, I already have it. I'm not buying another army for a game system when I have an army for said game system. So, I'm good, baby.
Yeah. I finished the Star Wars Legion army I was working on. So it's on to a new army. No, I'm gonna make a sixth edition Orc and Goblin army. A sixth edition Orc and Goblin army.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Because I've always wanted to paint a sixth edition Orc and Goblin army.
But they're terrible in sixth edition.
Yeah, they're terrible in every edition. Orcs have never been competitive.
Iron Jaws are competitive.
Those are Oryx.
I'm trying to think. No, you know what? I take it back. There was a Night Goblin list in 6th edition that was competitive. It was it was 8 Bolt Throwers, 4 Doom Divers, and then Max Magic.
Yeah, fuck ton of Night Goblin Shamans.
Yes. Yeah, that was a competitive list. It was the closest it ever got to competitive. And then it fell off once Terror started really coming on top, because you would just like take a Terror thing and just be like, I fly this Terror causing unit in the middle of your army, and they're like, I release Fanatics. And you're like, okay, it doesn't kill my terror causing thing. And your whole army fucking breaks.
I release the Fanatics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, this
is my thing doesn't care about the Fanatics and your whole army breaks.
Well, this is the way I look at it. It's like, I have multiple Age of Sigmar armies. I have multiple 30K armies. I have no desire to make an Orc and Goblin army using the classic Orc and Goblin models I have for Age of Sigmar. So it's like, I'll just do it up in the way that I want to do it with square bases, and I'll rank and file, make it look nice and pretty.
So a Kings of War army.
So kind of, yeah, but not bad. No, it's bad. But the I love sixth edition, so I'm just gonna, I have a ton of old metals. I'm just gonna make everything for sixth. Might as well.
I mean, I like sixth edition as well. Just fucking A, Orcs and Goblins, man. That's the struggle bus.
I get it. I'm not faulting you and thinking that it's a dumb idea, but you know me, I paint super fast, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you're going to put it in a cabinet anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like I'm going to be out there, like, trying to play ninth edition fantasy, or the ninth age, sorry, with
it. Is it still ninth age? They're not at 10th age yet?
No, not yet. They still haven't made it through the rule book of ninth age to get to the 10th age. You have to finish the rule book, and the rule book just keeps going. It's never ending.
You know what? Maybe you'll laugh last when they release the square base Warhammer again.
Yeah, the Warhammer world, the return to the old, whatever they're calling it.
I think they're just calling it Warhammer the old world, actually.
Yeah, which would make sense. I'm still thinking that it's going to be like the 30K version of fantasy. So
yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I think it's good. I think if they can also play it in a very smart way and make themselves a little bit of extra money, which I know Games Workshop wants to do, by just releasing movement trays for circle bases.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, yep. And you can use your, you can use everything, basically everything except for what Sigmarines would really be viable.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, you could do a lot with it. As I always say, old world's going to depend on what rule set they use. Are they going to use 8th, or are they going to use something earlier, or is there going to be something brand new? I'm hoping it's something brand new, because 8th edition, it was a slog.
Yeah.
And the rules weren't terrible. It was just a slog to play, and to be competitive in 8th edition was boring as hell.
Yeah, I'd actually like to see them just actually try and do a new... Like this is the new square base rule set that we have come up with, not a redux of any previous edition.
I would agree too, because like for me personally, just looking at the old rule sets, it's like that's every block fantasy game or block historical game out there. Like if they really wanted to do something fantastic, come up with a new block infantry game. And just like a new engine, a new way of playing, that you could still have a lot of the feel of the old stuff, but just make it newer, you know?
Yeah, I mean, especially if they take lessons from Warmaster and from War of the Ring.
Yeah, you could do some really nice stuff with that. I honestly think that I would just play, you know, if you could play 28mm Warmaster, why not?
Yeah, well, I mean, also War of the Ring is a fantastic fucking rule set.
Yeah, it really is.
Super good rule set. So they can take a lot of the good stuff from there. And that also has a built-in movement tray idea already for how to do your regiments in with movement trays.
Yeah.
So that's a thing. I don't know. I would be interested to see it. Because I think that game is really, really good. It's one of those games that, like, it just, you know, kind of fell out of print and was made, you know, it's just gone now. Like, you can't find people playing it. But, man, as far as just fucking rules go, God damn, it's a really good rule set.
So did you pick up your General's Handbook?
I did not. I did not. I'm holding off on it simply because I don't think I'll be playing any games of Warhammer until the next General's Handbook.
Maybe. I will tell you this, that the actual book itself is fairly light on anything truly groundbreaking for the game. So,
well, I know it has the custom heroes rule, but those are likely not going to be used in tournaments.
They have the open play Skies of Slaughter, and they spend like the first 30 pages of the book on it, and you're just like, no one is going to play this. it's a spaceship game, but with like flying stuff in Age of Sigmar. It's kind of silly.
What?
Yeah, it's basically like, oh, I have my flying tugboat, and you have your big flying bird. So let's have them fly against each other and fight in the skies.
Oh, and so it's like a dogfight game for things that can fly from Age of Sigmar.
Yes, that's a great way. That's a good elevator pitch.
All right.
So you're like, okay, but they do have the new match play stuff in there, which is actually kind of nice. All the battle plans, everything looks really great in there. The narrative play stuff is meh.
Nobody cares about narrative play. Or rather, I should take it, if you care about narrative play, you don't need the rules that they're presenting you.
Yeah, I mean, I read through it, and I got to the Conquest Unbound stuff, which is pretty good.
Did they re-up that? Because I thought that debuted in the last one, and I thought it was okay, but could use some tweaks. So if they made that better, that's good.
Yeah, they got the tournament, all the tournament information in there. So it's actually kind of nice if you want to like design your stuff around like even the pitched battle, not the pitched battle. What's the thing with the meeting engagement? That's the one where you have like the smaller ones, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Smaller. Yeah. They have actual tournament stuff for that as well. As long as, as well as team format.
Nice. That's good.
So, like, if you're a tournament player, that's good, I guess. But, I mean, aside from that, it also has all the new point cost stuff for pitch battles updated. Okay. And I didn't see anything groundbreaking in that one where I was like, oh, my God! If they change something by, like, 5 or 10 points, it completely escaped my purview.
Yeah, I would need to see. It's General's Handbook 2019, right?
No, 2020.
Oh,
we are in 2020, Steve.
Well, I don't know if they do the year behind.
Nope.
Because some stuff, some games, like Magic is always, there's always a previous year set that is valid in current set.
Yeah. So no, this is...
Right now, Core 19 is still a thing. Or no, Magic is a year forward. Other way around. Like 2021 is the set that's in Magic right now, I think. My brain's fried. I don't even know.
My brain's fried. I don't even care anymore.
None of this matters. We're all gonna die.
We're all gonna die. I told you. You shut yourself up in your apartment, and Kool-Aid Man, COVID Man, is gonna knock down that wall.
No. I'll be fine. But the problem is I'll come out to. I'll have to eventually come out, and everyone will just be dead. So I'm doomed either way.
Yeah.
It's like I'll be okay, but all the other people who won't be okay are going to doom me in the end. Here are the big changes. There's actually a lot of points changes. Let's see, Sylvaneth got points reductions, Nurgle points reductions across the board. Damn near everything got a discount in Nurgle. Radagast is down, Regrade and Cleanlands are down, Glotkin's down 40 points, which is huge. Blight Kings are down 20 points, which is huge. Plague Drones, Nurglings, the plus Goyle Blightlord's also down. So a whole fuck ton of stuff is like points down for Nurgle, which is great. That's very good. Beast of Chaos, bunch of point reductions. Battalions, bunch of point reductions for them. Daughters of Cain, the Blood Rack Shrine and the Hag Queen got increased in points. Bunch of other stuff, minus points. Monsters are mostly like, just generic various monsters have been minused. A couple are plussed. The Rogue Idol, which I know was a thing for orcs, I think. That was really popular. That got increased. Legion of Nagash got points reductions. Blades of Khorne got, one of their gigantic war battalions got reduced from 1,200 points to 1,100 points. it looks like everything is minus points. I'm looking here. Minus, minus, minus. They revealed the points for the Sons of Behemoth, even though they're not out yet.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
They have four unit choices. The Man Crusher Gargants are 180 for a minimum sized unit, 480 for a maximum sized unit. Their Mega Gargants are 490, and there's three types. Two of them are 490, one of them is 480. So there you go. The Sons of Behemoth points are out.
Yeah, looking at it, it's you're only going to have two unit choices. You're going to have your Mega Gargant and your regular Gargant.
Yep.
And however... That is not saying that when the actual book comes out, there might be something different, because this is literally just based off of the stuff that we've seen so far.
Right. Well, there's also, it's also likely that the regular Gargan will count as 10 and the Mega Gargans will count as 20 models. So you'll be able to play, like actually play the game, even just using Gargans. But also because of the allies rules, if you want to take a horde of something to be like a sponge, you can just do that.
Sponge.
Like a 500 point unit of Noblar or some shit.
you just take like 1,000 Noblar.
Yeah. Just like, here's my giants and these are the Noblar. Skaven got reduction, Stormcast. Literally every unit in Stormcast got a points reduction. Almost all of their battalions got point reductions too. Beasts of Chaos got huge point reductions. The Saigor, 40 points. Gorgon, 40 points. The Doombull, 20 points. Bulgor is 20 points. All down. That's big. Khorne lost some stuff. All of the Nurgle battalions all lost points. They got, that was big cuts. So yeah, so there you go. Those are the big changes. It basically looks like points reductions all around and nothing else.
Yeah. So. It's, as I say, it's a relatively boring update though. So
yeah. Nothing. Well, for some armies, that's a big deal. Like for Stormcast, yeah, to have everything reduced in points, that's very good. Stormcast are a weird army because they're like, they're very strong per model, but they always just end up mid-tier because their points are just too constrictive to get them like able to play. It's like a weird, they're a very weird army to evaluate, and I think attacking them via reducing their points is probably the best way to go, just because a lot of their stuff is good. It's just they have a very difficult problem of being the quote-unquote worth its points. That's like, that's the army, quote-unquote worth its points, question mark. That's that's the Stormcast.
Battletech, why?
Battletech, why?
I like, we, Steve and I were talking that there's on Tabletop Inquirer, they actually did they had a headline that said Battletech's still a thing apparently, and we're like, god damn it, this is a direct ripoff of the Game Classy podcast.
That was our content.
That was our content. It's, to be fair, we were doing that when Battletech was in its like 13th edition. Now they're on 16th edition, so they just released the new edition of it. So I don't know how many editions Battletech has, but I'm assuming it's a lot.
I believe the current edition is 6 technically, but Battletech never does numbered editions.
Yeah, and Battletech actually doesn't change. So if you use your rule book from, you know, 1987, it's probably still good.
Most likely. I think a lot of the gameplay is mostly the same, but there's also two distinct Battletech games that are always in action, because there's one called Classic Battletech, which is just like, there's Battletech, which is the current edition, which is the one that changes the most, and then there's Classic Battletech, which is every so often re-released with like no sweeping changes but cleanups. Think of it like being a General's Handbook for Battletech, but instead of, there's never another edition, they just keep doing General's Handbooks. That's Classic Battletech.
That was
the core rules never change.
People just absolutely like, the people who love Battletech love Battletech. I don't get it. Like, I think Battletech is fine. It looks kind of cool, like depending on what kind of models you're getting. But I have,
for me, I've always found it to be amazing as a universe and entertaining as a universe. I just don't like the minis game. I think video games are awesome. I think there's some of the best gameplay experiences I've ever had in a computer game was fucking MechWarrior. Super cool, great game.
Like how they still have those same MechWarrior pods that they've been bringing around for like the last 30 years to conventions?
Yeah, it's really funny. It's just like, it's so odd that that's still a thing. But I mean, they're fun. Like, but what else? I mean, there's really no, the only thing that you could do to make them better is really improve the graphics. Like,
yeah, that's, I mean, really it. I know, and it's just so funny because they still bring those things out at conventions and still charge the same fucking amount of money to play them. It's like,
and they're still constantly full.
Yeah, and I guarantee you those things have been paid off like in spades at this point. They have to have been.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely, no question. But yeah, of course. But that's what I'm saying. Like you go to Gen Con and there's like 12 pods and they're full 24/7. Someone is in them 24/7. Like, the last time I went, I was like, oh, that might be fun. Maybe I'll play in a Battletech pod. And they were like, here's the waiting list. Looks like some slots might be opening up tomorrow if we have some no-shows. And I'm like, you fucking serious? So, yeah.
Let's just open up a Battletech pod center that's got like 30 of those pods in it. And like, it's just, it's the same thing all the time. Just,
you know, the first BattleTech Center did open in Chicago. That was, so it is technically a local tradition.
What was that, over at North Pier or not Navy Pier, right?
I don't actually know where it went. There was only I know it was like two were in Japan and one was in Chicago. I don't know where they were. Japan still has those. Japan actually has been keeping it going. Japan has the most recent their version of Battle Pods, but it's a Gundam.
Well, that makes sense.
Absolutely insane. Like it's a full in. So you know how like the BattleTech cabinet is like an environmental cab, quote unquote. You get in and there's monitors.
Yeah.
The Gundam one is when you get in, you sit in like the chair cockpit, and when the screen loads up, the room is the fucking screen. Like. You look around and like there's screen everywhere. It's very, very cool.
Leave it to the Japanese, man. Leave it to the Japanese.
I mean, they never stopped going ham with arcades. Arcades don't die if you don't have hundreds of thousands of miles of just fucking nothing like America.
Yeah, well, America, the problem became is that all arcades, in order to be profitable, either had to have car games or you had to have like DDR. Like you had to have games that were immersive games. Like you couldn't just have a stand up cabinet anymore. Like that, right. that didn't work.
It also is, the way the society is laid out. Like if you look at like Japan's size, versus foot traffic versus people like going into the arcades, entire country is very dense with people. Yes. So if you put an arcade even near Tokyo, you're still going to have more people walking by your arcade than you will ever have if you put one, say, I don't know, 10 minutes from where I live. So that's a huge factor of why their arcades are going. Although it does seem like COVID is taking them down for all intents and purposes. I'm seeing some 30 plus, 40 plus year old arcade establishments in Japan closing. So they are being defeated by the virus as we speak.
Yes. So the other, there's something else gaming wise I wanted to bring up. So Steve, how do you feel about female space marines?
Well, we already had our great discussion on it. And I think the best call is absolutely to do nothing but change the lore, because that would infuriate the fanboys the most.
I think that's absolutely true.
Like, and what did that, hang on, I think I'm just going to repeat what I said to you in Messenger. it should be like, all right, here's what I said. Marine armor is non-gender specific. There are males, females, and non-binary space marines. And retcon it, so it's always been that way. and then they can just rub their hands together and cackle.
And just watch like those guys' heads just explain.
just cue the YouTube videos of guys burning their space marine army.
I look at the it as basically the meme of like the sad crying guy going like, well, if you want to have female space marines, you have to have male sisters of battle. And then you have me on the other hand just saying, yes.
Yes. Yes. They're just nuns. So yes, there technically are male sisters of battle because they're dudes in that army. There's dudes in the penitent engine. There's the fucking priest dude with the chainsaw. Like there are guys in that army.
I would say that there could be trans sisters of battle. There's no reason for that. Reason not for that.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Who cares?
Yeah. It doesn't matter in the long run. There's your stupid toy models, and you should be able to...
Do whatever the fuck you want.
Do whatever the fuck you want with it. They are goddamn toys.
Yeah. Also, if we're noting, I believe the average Catholic cloister clergy is something like one dude to like 50 women, right? Isn't that... Isn't that all that...
I mean, let's face it. I don't want my fake fascist game at taking anything from the incredibly creepy Catholic Church. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the Catholic Church is religiously fascist.
Fascist theocracy.
Fascist theocracy.
Fascist.
We're saying a lot of words that have th and th and s. So now I'm fucking, my goddamn tongue is getting all tangled up. but regardless of all those things, I believe that's like their gender ratio is usually something like that. So it would even make sense that there are, you know, like I said, there are male Sisters of Battle. They're just not prevalent because they've chosen to do that gender ratio reflective in the real world.
So I will, I'll make a brief comment on the ongoing issues with Arch in the community. We've been following him for the last few weeks, the last few casts.
Oh, there's still more with that guy?
There is more with that guy. he tried to do the classic alt-right argument, trying to expose the fallacy of tolerance. Whereas, like, if you're really tolerant, you have to tolerate my intolerance.
Right, but you can't expose that because that's the whole point.
Well, that's the whole point. And, it's just, it's really dumb. He put out this fucking thing. I'm going to see if I could find a copy. Ooh, Alexander Harlequins.
Yes, the paradox of tolerance, there is a bottom line. Like, that's all that means. Like, once you are below the bottom line, it doesn't matter where your opinions are discarded. That's what that means. Like, no one has to listen to your opinion if it's below that bottom line.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys who doesn't necessarily like giving these people any playtime, but I feel it's hysterical.
If it's very relevant to 40K, we are talking about 40K.
Yeah,
I don't know shit what's going on with that. I generally don't pay attention to the quote unquote right-wing provocateurs because I feel that they're all a waste of space. But
yeah, I mean, it's more of just funny to me.
Yeah, I mean, dunking on them is not giving them a platform, so yes.
Yeah. So he feels like he wrote this whole thing, and you could find it if you want. I do not recommend it. He said this is the last chance for GW to change its opinion. Like, yeah, like they're gonna do that. Warhammer is for everyone, and that includes basically people who are completely intolerant shit.
That includes fascists.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
This is his words. The spell was broken, and the community immediately descended into vitriol and witch hunts. A little over a month after the statement, the community has never been more fractured. It has never been more divided, and everyone is wondering who is up next on the chopping block. You know who's not on the chopping block, Steve?
Who?
Me? You? People who give a shit? You know?
The vast majority of people?
The majority of people?
The phrase witch hunt only works if you're talking about the fact that there is no witch. In this case, there is a literal witch.
Yeah. Very astute, Steve. Very astute. There is a witch, and it's this asshole guy. But
there was another one that I saw, actually. I'm sure it's somehow related to this in some way. I can't tell, but apparently some Black Library author.
I sent you that one. Yeah.
Yeah. You sent that to me and I did not get it. Like, it just appeared to be like that dude did not appear to have any sort of political leaning at all. So I was confused as to like what possibly that could have been other than like maybe some classic just industry blackballing.
I'll see if I could find it really quick. But basically, the concept was there's a Black Library author who called out a bunch of like right wingers who were calling his shit, whatever have you. He just basically called them out, and he got fired from Black Library. Looking for it. But the problem is that he basically went out and started telling people that, and Games Workshop pulled him aside and said, don't do that. And he continued to do it, and that's when he got fired. Now, I'm not saying that Games Workshop is right for firing him, because I don't think that they, they should really... Oh, here we go. Thomas Parrott is his name.
Okay. That at least makes sense. Because yeah. I was trying to figure out, because usually when someone gets dipped like that, there's like I usually go to their Twitter and I find it to be just like a string of like racist vitriol, and I'm like, oh, okay. No. But that guy, his Twitter just seemed normal. It seemed very not political, like at all. So yeah. That's why I was just like, I did the chin stroke on that one.
Yeah, no, he was basically told by his boss to knock it off, and he didn't, and he got fired for it. And as I was saying, I don't think that the boss made the right move on that one, but I also think that, you know, you have to take a stand at that point. So if your boss tells you no, you do it, you own up to the fact that you did it. And you take pride in the fact that you did that. And you're like, well, you know what? If, you know, this is the company I'm going to work for, I don't want to work for them. You know? I mean, that is true.
Like that's true. If they said, hey, don't do this, and he continued to do this, he knew what was going to happen. So yeah, he made that choice.
I fully support it.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to shit on them for doing that. I disagree with that choice, but you know what? I think that there's a lot of one of the biggest issues of us living in an extraordinarily capitalistic society. People care far too fucking much about what corporations say.
Yeah.
In general, like when Apple does the fucking like rainbow icon on Twitter, and it's just like, Apple uses literal slaves to make their shit. Yeah. Like literal slaves. Like, we're not talking like wage slaves, they're getting paid barely nothing. We're talking literal Uyghur slaves from China make Apple shit. So I don't really think that I give a fuck if Apple puts their logo as a little rainbow apple. Like, that's the thing. But people will like boycott or not boycott a company based on choices like that. And it's just like, they're a corporation. They're mega evil. Like, it doesn't they can make you think whatever you want, but like, they're all evil. And like,
Have you never played Shadowrun or watched any movie in the 1980s about sci-fi? All corporations are evil.
Right. And even if they aren't evil, at some point they break.
Yeah.
In some way, at some point they break. Like, Ben and Jerry's is a great example of a company that I believe, I didn't dig too deep, but seemed to be 100% good until 2003 when they were bought out by a conglomerate.
Yep.
And now they are evil. They talk a lot of talk, but as a whole, as a company, they are still evil.
Well, if you ever notice on a lot of that, it's usually like when they talk a lot of talk, it's Ben and Jerry's founders say this, or Ben and Jerry's founders do this. Yes, it's Ben and Jerry's.
Yes. It's a very thing. But that's the only two. Like, I do not care if a political company does not align with my political interests. The only exception to that, and I believe this is an important thing for people to make this distinction and to start making this distinction, is who do they donate money to?
Exactly.
If they donate money to an organization that actively harms you, people in your community, or people you love and care for, don't support that company. That's what matters. It doesn't matter what the fuck they say. It matters what the fuck they do. And if they're a company that supports, things like not allowing minimum wage for restaurant workers or gay conversion therapy like Chick-fil-A or things like that. Like, if that's the kind of thing they support, maybe don't support those corporations. You can't support a good corporation because there's no such thing as that. But you can at least support one that might not actively be donating money to like reduce your existence on the world or like people you care about's existence on the world. That's the best you can do, because that's the world we live in.
Like, that's the world we live in.
And I think there's a lot of, I hate to use the term virtue signaling, because I believe virtue signaling is done by corporations and not by people. I believe that's a brand thing. I don't think people can virtue signal. I believe brands can virtue signal. So if you're a big enough person, like popular enough, then you can virtue signal because you have an audience.
So what you're saying is, Steve, is that you and I, because of the only, you know, 24 followers that we have, cannot virtue signal.
we're not big enough to virtue signal. You have to have a brand. You have to have something you're making money. Like a YouTuber who's making, a YouTuber with 5 million subscribers who's making fucking bank every month off of AdSense money, that person can virtue signal because they can increase or decrease their personal wealth immediately by their decisions. So that's what I feel is virtue signaling, because like, it costs them nothing to do and they can increase or decrease their support to do it. So that's where I think it's like, as a regular person, regular people can't do that. Like, whenever I see some like two dudes with 20 Twitter followers really arguing with each other, and one of them accuses the other of virtue signaling, and I'm like, you guys both have 20 followers. Nobody fucking cares. Like it's just not the way it is.
Yeah. Some people will think that 20 followers gives them the clout so much to do so.
But that's what I mean. Like, it's like, even like, yeah, sure, those 20 people might care. Like, even if every one of those 20 people hinges on your every word, it doesn't matter what you say, because those 20 people aren't going to make and break your fucking finances. You know?
Absolutely. All right.
That's it. So I think that GW trying to remain as an apolitical entity is fine. And I believe that if they, you know, all they need to do is be like, extremes are not welcome, that's also fine.
Yep. All right.
Like, if they want to navigate the waters of trying to remain fully centrist, more power to them. That's very difficult to do. But if they can do it, I would be impressed.
That's right. All right. So last thing that I have, they released the Underworld's roadmap for the rest of 2020. So Shadespire, what's going on with it? Because it's been basically quiet for the last 6 months. I mean, there really hasn't been a release.
Yeah,
I want to say February at this point. So they just released some solo play adventures, which look interesting. And I know you like solo play. So
Yes, solo play is cool.
So you might want to pick up your Nurgle guys and do some solo play.
I have the Nurgle guys because they're for the Age of Sigmar army. So
you probably already sold the. Did you already sell the cards?
Oh, instantly.
Instantly. And then, so that's this month. Next month, they're going to release the final two warbands of this season of Beastgrave, which are the Oryx and the Witch Elves, which are really cool sculpts. I mean, they're really nice stuff. Then in September, they're going to do a multiplayer expansion, so you could play with multiple people. I kind of saw that coming, just because the rules for multiplayer that they have are actually pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say, they already had multiplayer, and I played it a couple times, and it was fine.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I especially like the no doubling up on cards. I think that that's fucking amazing.
It definitely makes the what's good and what's bad very different, I would say. Like, some cards that were, like, was when we played a couple games, it was me, Giuseppe, and Kevin. We played a few games, just, you know, free-for-all, and, like, cards that were always include staples in 1v1 were like mediocre at best in the free-for-all game, and then some cards that I never would take, I would be like, you know what, I actually, this one card that I'd never use, I would actually use in this scenario.
Yeah, no, I've played a bunch of 1v1v1, and it's I quite enjoyed a lot, because I feel like warbands that wouldn't normally get their due are able to actually do fairly well when there's like distracted opponents and whatever else have you.
Yeah, shittier warbands are much better in that mode too.
And then I know that they're doing they say in November there's going to be some sort of downloadable expansion. I don't know what that is. I'm assuming it's a like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's for the game, like for the video game Underworlds.
I did pick up that game when it went on Steam sale. I picked that up.
Yeah, any good?
It's very good. Yeah, it's essentially exactly Warhammer Underworlds. Like, it literally is Warhammer Underworlds. The difference is they've really curated the card pool. So it launched with a balanced card pool. Some of the broken cards, just the ones that have like that are just permanently banned.
Yeah.
They don't exist. And then it has a restricted list. But like, there is no Earthquake. Like, you can't use Earthquake. It's not a card. There is no Great Concussion. It's not a card. And then like the other cards that are like super busted are already like, you know, the restricted list is in play. And the game is much better for that by far. Like, launching with a restricted list means that like you can actually play some armies in the stage that you could never play, or play them in a way that you could never play them before. Yeah. And like, the different strategies are still viable. Like, you can still play the, you know, more defensive orcs with Shardgale and the inspired achievements or objectives, but you can't play with like the super busted objectives that are just like free glory every turn, no matter what. So there's actually counterplay. The game's, it's good. I'll say that it's good. I'm interested to see, because I think it just got out of early access. So I'm looking forward to them adding more stuff and keeping the card list curated.
I would play it as all hell if it was on the mobile. Since it's a desktop game, I don't have the time to play it.
The graphics are actually too good for people.
I know that's what you say, but I'm saying it's not like they can't downgrade the graphics to play on a mobile phone.
I agree. I think that it would be great as a mobile game. I think it would be fantastic as a mobile game, actually. And I think that they should try to launch it as a mobile game, because I think it would be a smash hit if they did.
Oh my God, it would be as big as Hearthstone.
I don't think it would be that big, but it would definitely be a big hit.
It's Rory Calhoun big.
Nothing's as big as Hearthstone. Not on the phone. Shadowverse is the closest one, and Shadowverse has massive financial backing and is super attractive to weebs. So,
and then finally in December, they're going to release the next season. So the season got pushed back, I think, 4 months, which makes sense because that was as long as the quarantine. So yeah, season 4 is going to drop in December. We'll probably start seeing previews of that soon. So that's good, at least.
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking about how sad I was that normally I get my update on what the new season of Underworld is going to be at Gen Con, and no Gen Con this year. So sad me.
No Gen Con. You know what was wild though? There's another fucking Auric army. I was just like, oh, more Aurics. All right.
You mean Warband?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. These guys are the bigger ones though. Cause the other ones were just black Aurics. These guys are
These are the fatty guys. The brutes.
The brutes, I guess. I don't remember what they're called.
I think they're called brutes.
Yeah. These are the bigger dudes, not just the black Aurics.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
I'm down. They're Morgox crushes. That's what they're called. Yeah. And then I really like the Witch Elf Warband, but oh man, that one jumping over the stone with the whip, that is gonna fucking break in every fucking if you do not magnetize, I'm going to break. That is what that model is screaming.
Yeah. I mean you're not playing it anyway, so
oh, I would magnetize, that'd be fine. I no longer have to suffer with the like weird shaped models breaking in transport because I just magnetized everything, and it was well worth the conversion from just not doing transports anymore and just doing the A case, the magnetized case. Like I'll never go back to doing foam. Like it's never gonna happen. The only exception would be something like, I guess if I were to like transport my Fallout stuff, I would have to use foam because the Fallout stuff has resin bases that are sculpted and they're not hollow, so I can't put magnets in there without doing like some serious drilling work, which fuck that. But also the Fallout miniatures are like very average size and volume for minis, so they'll fit in the normal boxes. They're not like a lot of the Warhammer models where it's like a dude jumping in the air doing the fucking splits with a spear standing straight up.
Oh man.
Magnets. They are magnets. The future.
How do they work? All right. So do we have any other sort of gaming stuff we want to talk about? Anything like tabletop wise? I can't really think too much. I think there was something D&D that I wanted to talk about, but
the D&D Theros book's coming out next week.
No, it's not that
magic book.
It was something with the actual company itself. I don't remember exactly what it is, and whatever it is, it's probably not that important or entertaining anyway.
I don't know. The only recent Wizards news I know is that there was a. Noah Bradley, who's an artist who's done over 100 magic cards, was outed as a sexual predator. So,
oh, you know, I think I read about that too.
So it was that, I guess.
maybe I don't think that was necessarily it, but
I don't know. It's just funny. The first reply to his like giant confession / apology thing was someone just said, "What's that saying? It's always the first guy you expect."
Jesus.
Yeah, so like that's the only big Wizards news that I know of. So that also actually created a minor spike in interest for the Double Masters set. So Double Masters is the next like highly collectible Magic the Gathering set.
Yeah.
But in addition to being a set that's going to be reasonably in demand because it already like they already spoiled 4 cards that are insanely valuable. Like one of the cards is a $300 card currently, so like it's, you know, that's big news for the sets. People want it bad. It also has Noah Bradley lands in there. And they're and they're like, yeah, so this set went to print before that happened. Cause that happened like late last month. And yeah. Magic sets are printed months and months in advance. So these are still going to have the Noah Bradley lands, but any future printings will no longer have Noah Bradley lands. So what that means is that now in these VIP special super expensive boxes, which are going to be, or there's not an MSRP because Magic got rid of MSRPs per box, but you're probably going to look at $150 per pack on VIP because VIP is now the like craziest priced product that's ever existed. So the way VIP is being sold is VIP is being sold per pack. There's four packs in a box, but the cost is going to work out to you're paying about $150 a pack. So
Jesus Christ.
That means it's going to be a $600 booster box. So probably will end up not being anywhere near that, I would imagine. But I mean, I would easily see it being a $500 booster box. So let's just say a $500 booster box of four packs. Now the fact that these Noah Bradley lands are going to be in there and they'll never be printed again, this will be the last Noah Bradley anything, means that there's probably going to be a spike in value for the VIP packs. And then, of course, an insane value for the Noah Bradley lands, just because now they're going to be super collectible because they're never going to get printed ever again.
Yeah. That's the sad thing. It's like owning a John Wayne Gacy painted clown, you know? Like,
yes.
It's like you own it, but do you really want to show it off?
Like, yeah, I mean, the thing is like he will eventually fade, like his relevance will eventually fade and people will just know it as an expensive card.
Yeah. I mean, like, it just is an expensive rare card. And it's like, in actuality, it's like you'd actually probably want to show off a John Wayne Gacy before you showed off a card, you know, painted by a sexual predator, mainly because it's like John Wayne Gacy. It's like, well, he was executed for his crimes, you know? So you're like, oh, okay. And then you're like, and this guy lives currently in Gary, Indiana, and he...
Yeah, his I'd say his career is sufficiently executed. So, I mean, that's good.
I would like to believe so, but however, I know that that's not always the case. It's always like it's the these people will he'll just end up going and painting for some alt-right
card
game.
His mainstream career is over.
Yes, like it's like
that's of course what it is. There was also a Falderall where they banned some cards that had racial connotations.
I saw that. Yeah.
So I felt that these were like a few of these were very much like, okay, that's very on the nose. And then a couple of them I was kind of like, really? That's kind of weird. The biggest one, of course, being the one that people have talked about the most, the longest, is Incite Prejudice, which is a card from Legends. It literally has Klansmen on it.
Oh, Jesus.
Like actual straight up Klan, like there's Klansmen on it. And a dude has a double-bladed axe and the card's called Incite Prejudice. So like, literally Klansmen. Okay, that one, you got me. One is called Crusade, which has been printed a long, like many, many times, and it's white creatures get +1/+1. I thought that was kind of innocuous, like just kind of like, I mean, okay, like sure. I didn't really feel that one was particularly like out there. Like, I get it, okay.
It's Invoke Prejudice.
Invoke Prejudice? Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry to interrupt your flow. I wanted to look at the card and okay.
Invoke Prejudice. Very good. The image I'm looking at is a little blurry, so it's an insight. So there's Crusade, which is white creatures get +1/+1. I guess that's because of the literal crusades, which I mean that happened, you know, kind of a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Although I guess that's a bit of the that's probably a bit of the alt-right thing because they like to invoke crusading imagery.
Yeah, and not to mention the H.W. Bush, when we were invading, was it Iraq? He wanted to call it Operation Enduring Crusade, and people were like, you can't do that, sir. Yes.
They also did Jihad. That one is also banned.
Yeah, I can see that one. Okay.
That one is from the set Arabian Nights. And
which is like 30 years old at this point.
Where it's very old set. And like it's kind of like, I mean, I guess why bother at this point to ban that card? Like, I don't know. It just seems like that's contemporary connotation, like really kind of warping even the historical significance of the card. Cause like Jihad just means holy war. Like it's just a word. Like it's not a slur. It's not a made up thing. It's just literally a word in a foreign language. So again, for me, I'm kind of like, eh. But again, I'm not Wizards of the Coast. I'm not making these calls. But that's one that I would have just been like, eh, whatever. It's a fucking ancient card that nobody gives a shit about anyway. Now we're gonna get rid of it. This one, I'll give him this one. This card is called Cleanse, and the effect is all black creatures in play are destroyed.
Oh yeah.
So that one. Yeah. So that's what I call foot in mouth racism.
Yeah.
that's what that one is. No one had any intention of that card being read that way, but looking at it, I can totally see how someone could read it that way, which is so.
I'm looking up on eBay currently right now, just on this, in that a full set of 78 cards from Arabian Nights, right? The original complete set.
Oh, that's got to be over $100,000.
No, it's only about 10,000.
It says Magic. I'm thinking. No, well, that's surprising. That's still lower than I thought.
Well, some of these are like the Juzum Jin, which is the like one of the famous ones, that in Scheherazade, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised I know this much about Arabian Nights, but I remember that Arabian Nights came out right around the time that Insight magazine.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably around the time people your age and my age were playing Magic the most.
Yeah. So the Juzum Jin is $10,000, but it's a 9.5 graded.
Yeah.
And they have a graded 10 Bazaar of Baghdad going for $18,000. Now, there's one guy who's selling the full set graded of Arabian Nights. All of them are graded at a 9.5 or higher. For selling for $80,000.
Okay, see, there you go. So I said $100,000. So $80,000 is closer to what I would expect.
Yeah, and well, I mean, that's all graded, and it costs a shit ton of money to get your shit graded.
Right. I would only assume that someone putting a full setup would have a full graded setup. If it's just a complete set, a bunch of those cards are probably beat to fucking shit.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one. I just wanted to see that because it's probably one of the more famous older sets.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm seeing how much a box costs of this.
You probably can't find a box of it at this point. So then here's an Arabian Nights card that got banned. This is another one.
Wait, hold on. An empty box of Arabian Nights booster box, $700.
There you go. Just the cardboard.
Just the cardboard.
Okay, so here's one that's banned. Stone Throwing Devils.
Okay.
I have no idea why this one is completely like I'm completely have no idea why the fuck this card would be even touched. It's called Stone Throwing Devils. It is a creature. It's a 1/1 creature with first strike. It's summon devils, and the illustration are like pink, lanky demon looking guys throwing rocks. As far as the how that card could be racist and offensive, you got me. Totally no idea on that one.
Here we go. A booster pack of Arabian Nights. Unopened, 8-card booster, $1,899 is the cheapest it's currently on there. You can buy, though, a Magic the Gathering Arabian Nights booster pack, wrapper only, for $32.
There you go.
People are stupid.
Well, no, because see, the wrapper only is you can use. So this is where you get into the nastiness of old Magic trading and why buying a booster pack in generally is foolish. Old booster packs of Magic are semi-translucent.
Yeah.
So if you're skilled, you can sift through them without opening the pack. Also, the glue is notoriously not super sticky. So if your pack is in mint condition and was opened very carefully, you could put your own cards in and reseal it.
So that
$32 on the pack, I can just grab a random set of Arabian Nights cards in the proper configuration that costs almost nothing. And what did you say a sealed pack was selling for? $8,000?
$1,000.
$1,000? Okay, so I buy the pack for $32, fill it with, I don't know, $50 worth of singles, slide it in the pack, seal it. Now I'm selling that pack for $1,000. So that's why you see weird shit like that.
Well, there you learn.
Repacking scams. The next one that was banned is Paradesh Gypsies. And I guess that's because gypsy is a racial slur from what I understand. I didn't know that. That's one of those ones like Eskimo where it's like, it's so prevalent and has been so ingrained. When you hear someone say that's a racial slur, you're like, is it?
Yep.
You're like, is it really? And then you look and like, and it's like, then the specific minority group that it's a slur against is like, yeah, it's a slur. And you're like, oh, my bad.
I always laugh about the term gypsy in that in Southern rock and roll, their prevalence of the word gypsy really inflates the number of gypsies who are probably in the South of America. Like seriously, every like Southern rock song is like evil gypsy woman. And you're just
right.
Like,
but also there's no gypsies in America. There are. They're the Roma people.
The Roma people. Yes.
Like they're the Roma people. They live in Europe. They don't live in the U.S.
Oh no, they do live in the U.S. There's a huge population in the U.S. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's like you like how many of these Southern rockers actually came into contact with evil gypsy women?
Yeah. Then the next one is In Prison, which another one that I don't get any sort of racial connotation. It's like a dude in an iron mask who's like locked within the card frame. I don't know. I find this one, again, this one I find much like Stone Throwing Devils to just be kind of like, I don't really see it. All of the other ones,
I'm looking at In Prison right now. I think it's because the prisoner has a darker skin tone.
That's pretty whack. He also has legs that look like they're 7 feet long. So
he looks like Del Sim is what he looks
like. Yeah, it looks like something that's not a regular like humanoid. It's a humanoid, not a human. But regardless, that one I feel is another sketch one. One and Stone Throwing Devils are the two that I'm just kind of like, I don't even see it. The other ones, every other one that is on the list, I'm like, at least like, okay, I can see it. Although, to put a point on it, none of these cards are tournament relevant.
Yeah.
None of these cards have ever been tournament relevant, except arguably sometimes maybe Crusade. So I wonder, and obviously this is just going to be pure speculation, something that'll never ever be able to be answered. But I wonder what the difference, if there would be a difference if any of these cards were like tournament staples in other in formats, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I just think that the Stone Throwing Devils, if you look at their faces, they're kind of caricature-ish. I mean, it's like, as you say, it might be a stretching it a bit, but you know what? Might as well. Who cares?
They're devils. They're demons. Yeah. They're not humans.
Yeah, go to the Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way to get in contact with us. You can like, comment, subscribe on iTunes. You can also like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes. If you want to see me on Instagram, I'm at Game Classy Joe. Steve is on Twitter at @command_throw.
That's correct.
Do we have anything else?
I don't know, man. Stay inside. Wear a mask if you can. fucking Christ, believe scientists. Jesus.
All right. So, Steve, until next time.
Reiterate what I just said.
Game Classy.